The following podcast is brought to you by the Village Zendo. For more information, visit villagezendo.org.
Thank you, Bokashu. Can you guys hear me all right? Okay, good. And Seizan, I hope you can see me better today. Oh, you like that light. Seizan thought I needed a little light to see my face better, which I think is probably true. Good morning. My name is Fusho, for those of you I haven't met. I'm happy to be here with you virtually. It's been a really nice couple of weeks experimenting in this new realm of online retreat. So normally we would be upstate somewhere, surrounded by the woods, or all together practicing. But I think we've been able to do it pretty well online somehow, as we're kind of going into this with beginner's mind, see how it works if we just have to tune in and practice together. So we're going into our last week, which I'm also looking forward to. And I think even if you haven't joined any of it, there's plenty of opportunities to join this week to practice together as we continue studying the study text, which is Dogen's painting of a rice cake. And we've been doing that in all different ways. We've had extra sitting, which has been great. Different workshops. We've had workshops about the actual text. And then we've had different workshops exploring ways to express the painting of the rice cake, or to experience it with music, listening to music, painting with watercolors. And then the one that I was delighted to help lead was the video making workshop. And then there was the Shakyo, which I really enjoy, which was the sutra copying. And then this week we'll be looking at expression through writing. But I wanted to share a little bit about my experience leading the video workshop. It was something I hadn't done before quite this form. I've never combined, I would say, my Zen practice with storytelling, like, which is what I do through video and film and journalism. But in this way that was so explicitly, how do we look at expressing something through video, utilizing the lens of the Zen practice and the Zen study text. And then we also, you know, we had all these constraints as well, just because of our current circumstances. We weren't able to get together, obviously, in person. So that was a constraint. And we weren't able to sort of, unless we were living with somebody who was also in the workshop, we weren't able to work with a group of people to create a story. So it became a very intimate process of sort of this way to tell a personal story or have a personal expression with our iPhones or our phones, our smartphones, or our whatever form of video camera we were using, which I think ended up being a really nice constraint, actually, because it sort of made me think about the differences of, so what happens when we put ourselves in front of the camera and we're telling our own story, a personal story, or we're sharing the way that we are uniquely seeing a point of view or a perspective, utilizing this tool of a video camera. And that was it's actually a type of filmmaking that I don't I'm not used to doing. I'm used to sort of a more formal, fictional, get a group of actors together and have a script and have a plan and have a shot list and have a cinematographer and a sound recording engineer and an editor, all these people that are usually involved in the craft of making a film, was not what we had at hand. So I think because of that, it ended up being, very much I had to come into it with beginner's mind and sort of say, well, let's see what happens. And then I was so moved because everybody else came into it with beginner's mind, coming from all different backgrounds with different experiences. Some people have made a living who were in the workshop shooting film, and some people had literally never made a video on their phone. So it was a wide range, but which kind of also, I think, opened me up to think about, well, what is it that we're doing when we're trying to express something? And how does it relate to, like I said, the Zen practice and particularly the study text? So in the workshop that's been on the Saturdays with the actual text that Ryotan Roshi and Shinryu Sensei are leading, in the one that happened last week, Ryo ended the workshop by asking us to write our own perspective and to write about how we paint our life. Which I think is just a great question, and I think is what our Zen practice always asks us to take note of and to turn to. He asked, how do we paint our life, and also how are we painted by our life? And I think as many of us explored those two questions, we came to the conclusion that they're not different. It's hard to find the borderline there where one ends and where the other starts. And so we utilized that question when we were making videos, personal videos, because I think, you know, we can think about the question and then we can also, as we're reading and studying, we can actualize it without even realizing that we're actualizing it. And I think for me, the question of how do you paint your life is also really saying and really asking, how do you respond to your life? You know, how do I respond to my life in this moment, moment by moment, as it's happening in front of me right now? And I don't know if there's a more important question. How do we respond to our life? I feel that this practice is always pointing us to that question. And by turning back around and looking at how we respond, or being aware of how we respond in this life that's constantly in flux, if we're able to do that with awareness, the awareness that we cultivate in our Zazen, then we can respond in a much more free way and perhaps a much more present and engaged way. And as Dogen says, if we're examining it in this way, the painting of the rice cake, we ask, what is it that thus comes? And if we can always ask that in whatever thing we're doing, if it's picking up the camera and introducing ourselves and looking at it, you know, when the camera's above us or when the camera's below us, or when we're moving the camera or we're not moving the camera, or when we're thinking about the camera being something else and what that perspective is, or when we're just engaging with that, if we're open enough to say, what is it that thus comes, and really examine that, Dogen says in another way to look at it, we would say, I am always intimate with this, if we're able to look at it with that sort of openness, I think. So I think that's what we've been exploring with these artistic means of creativity. But I think it doesn't have to be a painting or a video or a composition. It could be cooking breakfast, you know, the morning routine. It could be how we go to work, how we listen to somebody we care about, how we think about what our life is supposed to be or not supposed to be, or what we want it to be, and how we respond to all of those things. Dogen says, at the moment of your actualization, numerous actualizations manifest without hindrance. So for me, I think, for example, if I'm able to allow some open-heartedness or some beginner's mind after sitting on the cushion, that energy, if I can carry that energy to, let's say, the video camera, and I have an exercise I'm going to do. So there's the experience of filming something, pushing record, and looking at what I'm filming through the camera. And then there's the experience of stopping and playing it back and looking at what I've actually got on the camera. And oftentimes they're not the same. They're not the same as what I thought. And certainly, I should say, sometimes we have an idea before we start record of what we think we're trying to get or what we want to get, what our intention is. And that's very different than what we're actually capturing. And what we're actually capturing on the video is also very different than what we're looking at when we're playing it back. So I think that's sort of numerous actualization manifesting. Not to mention when we show what we've just recorded to somebody else, or we show the painting, or we play the music, or we talk, their experience of what that is, the way that they see it, is totally different than what our experience is of it. Because they are unique people with unique experiences. And we have no real control over that. They're going to experience it as we offer it. And then the way that they experience it and the way they respond is going to affect us. So then we might, because of their response, we might go back and look at what we shot and see it totally differently. Or I might put the movie away for a year or two, or even a few weeks, or even a couple days, and then come back to it, depending on who's looked at it or who's talked about it, or what's happened in my life in those few days or in that year, as all the constant changes have happened and causes and conditions have kept arising. And I'll look at the video and I'll see something totally different. So I think this idea of impermanence or emptiness comes from that experience of the perspective that's constantly changing. And that was what I think we explored, and it was really delightful to explore that. There's a pretty famous experimental filmmaker named Stan Brakhage, and he taught film in Boulder, where I'm from, in Colorado, for a long time. He was known for his experiments actually on film when we shot with real film, and just he started to kind of draw on the film and make marks on the film. But he has a famous quote when he was talking. I think he wrote a book. He was talking about seeing, ways of seeing. And he said, imagine an eye unruled by man-made laws of perspective. An eye unprejudiced by compositional logic. an eye which does not respond to the name of everything, but which must know each object encountered in life through an adventure of perception. That was sort of his approach or his philosophy, his way of approaching filmmaking and his way of expression. I'm going to read it one more time. He says, imagine an eye unruled by man-made laws of perspective. An eye unprejudiced by compositional logic. An eye which does not respond to the name of everything, but which must know each object encountered in life through an adventure of perception. So I think he's talking about creativity, but I also think he's talking about what we can experience when we sit on the cushion, and then when we come to our life with a fresh eye in the next moment, and the next moment. When we point the camera on ourselves or on somebody else or on an object, what happens when we do that without deciding what the name of it is or what it's supposed to be or if it's good or bad or if it's what we wanted it to be? I was thinking about one of the questions that I got from the workshop after we were finished. Somebody said, you know, there's so many elements involved in making a video. It's not just, oh, this is what I'm going to do, and there, it's done. It's sort of this technical thing that you have to know how to do, and then there's editing, and there's sound, and there's voice, and picture, and lighting. And so it's not as maybe straightforward of a process as sitting down with paint, say, and just putting something on the page. And so the question was, how do you, you know, so then you, it's so much harder to express what it is you're trying to say with all these other elements coming into it. How do you do that? How do you control what you're trying to say? You know, and somebody, which is always a question, right? And somebody else mentioned or brought up a few different people, which is quite common to say, like, I notice when I'm doing this, I'm suddenly very self-conscious, and I think that gets in my way because I'm worried that it's not going to be good or right or what I want it to be. Which I think is how many of us always can feel quite often about everything, even about our own lives. So I think that we need to have the idea that we have in our head that we want to express. That's a starting place. But then with our practice, you know, of sort of emptying out and letting go, we can hopefully make space and room for what actually happens. And so, like, as I said, it's normally filmmaking is this very communal art form where, to me, the actual art itself is what happens when other people contribute to the end result. And so it's never going to be exactly what you think. But what comes out of that is something you wouldn't have expected. And so it's always a question about, yeah, we want to be able to shape it and have a say and express it. But can we also allow the fact that it's not going to be exactly what we thought it would be or hoped it would be to actually be the art? You know, can we allow the fact that we are feeling self-conscious or we don't think it's good enough or we don't think it's what we're supposed to be doing? Can that be part of what goes into the expression that comes out? And then can we have the faith that I'm going to see it one way and you're going to see it another way and I'm going to see it a different way tomorrow. And then I'm going to try and make something else and I'm going to have different experiences and that's going to be creating something else. And that something else is going to affect somebody else in a different way. I think if we can also do that in our day-to-day life, we can be a little more free of course, things aren't going to go exactly as we wanted all the time, and we're not going to be able to control the outcome. But with this practice, we can respond in a way that perhaps is more present, more engaged, more activated. One of the things that we did was watch a short film by Agnes Varda, the new wave filmmaker who spent her whole life making films and doing it in all different ways, different tools. And she was always very experimental. And I think I'm just so inspired by her because I see her as this embodiment of open-heartedness and someone who worked with beginner's mind her whole life. She never studied formally. She never watched a ton of films and thought that that was how she was supposed to make the films. She just became very interested in people, the people around her, and hearing what they had to say. And she often put herself in her films, and she talked about putting herself in her films not because she thought she was so important or should be a star, but because she thought that if she put herself in the film with other people that she wanted to put in the film, it would keep her honest and it would keep the stories honest. It wouldn't elevate it or separate it and to put it into some kind of pedestal. And she said in this interview that we watched, our perception has to be tickled all the time. And she was talking sort of at the end of her life. And she made a film about her life and her films at the end of her life, which is very Agnes Varda. But she says, since I'm old now, I've used all the tools, the film and black and white and color and video and photographs. And now even Instagram and the web and the internet. And she says, I've been creating films out of whatever. And that using all of these things, even something on the net, this is being free. This is trying to find a way to communicate freedom, to communicate joy or pain or the concern over what's happening in the world. You know, she says the unhappiness, the chaos is everywhere. And we still have to live in joy and put stories on Instagram. She says, I mean, we live in a world which is chaotic and contradictory. You turn on the TV and these images are attacking us. We get incredibly bad news. We have good news, we have bad news. And this is also the world of images. So we're always in this contradictory feeling, she says, because of these images attacking us in the world. She says, but, you know, that's a good response to all of these images and everything in our world attacking us is to offer our own, expression, to add to it, to add to the chaos. She says, by speaking about myself, it was a way of speaking about other people. You know, a life is made of encounters and expressions. Sometimes I succeeded by showing what I wanted to show, what I meant. I feel I do my best, and sometimes I'm not very good. I don't know if Agnes Varda meditated, but I do think she was a good example of a bodhisattva. And in this little interview, she says about her approach, I'm trying to be open. I'm trying to be listening. I'm trying to remain curious, which is good enough to occupy my life. So I say, let's put on our robes or our rakusu, or just our clothes, and sit down and see for ourselves so that we may thoroughly experience the ability to turn things and be turned by things.